This week on the Barrack Wall Show, we talk about prototyping with a flat CMS, convincing clients, and image optimization. Welcome to the BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design. Digital design? Yes, that's the thing. Development and strategy. I had to think about that for a minute. My name is Paul BOAG. Joining me on this week's show is Andy Clark, Sam Barnes, Lee Howes, and Ryan Taylor. Hello all.
Hello. I'm really glad that you're in such a foul mood this morning, because I just remembered that I forgot to take my happy pills this morning.
Oh, aren't happy pills the best thing ever? I haven't taken my happy pills either. Is anyone else on happy pills?
Are these real, actual happy pills, or
antidepressants?
Sertraline.
No, by the sounds of it, I might need some after this. Let's go.
I think you meant drag us down, were you?
They're not bloody working, are they? No, to be fair to me, you know, I've had an intense week. I've been away at conferences. I come back, find there's no internet. Which, when you've got a 14-year-old boy in the house, that's serious, you know. Real big deal.
At least you can reason with a 14-year-old boy, though. When you've got a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old who lose the shit when you've lost the internet and you can't explain to them why it's not working, they just know there's no internet. That's really bad.
But, of course, just to make things slightly more complicated, of course, everything's bloody connected to the internet now. So guess what? Our heating has gone down as well.
Yeah. The Internet of Things. What a great idea that is.
Yeah. What a stupid bloody idea.
But Paul, so there we go. Did you get a notification it had gone down?
No, obviously not. Because it couldn't connect to the internet to tell me.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. Just although that's a great way of testing that your internet's come back up, because if you're out and about, you can try and heat it off. And if it works, you know your internet's working.
I just don't care anymore. But I've done all the things you're supposed to do. It looks like there's something wrong with the line, which means they've got to send an engineer out, so I won't have internet until 2018 now.
Oh, didn't
so
you have this problem before with the exchange near your house or something?
Oh, yeah, I used to have loads and loads of problems, but it was all fixed and it's been great for like 2 years, and I've been used to the internet just being stable and normal, and that's what everybody else experiences. And so this is traumatic, you know. When it used to happen every 5 minutes, you were kind of just used to it, but you know, anyway,
it's funny how reliant we become on stuff, isn't it? Because you need to get used to the heating working. When we had Matilda, the night that we had Matilda, our boiler packed in and we were having a home birth.
Nice.
So Michelle's sat on a birthing ball in our living room, like in labour, and I'm like fighting with British Gas to send out an engineer to come and fix my boiler in an hour.
That's the most twisted sort of support I've ever heard of during that process.
The poor lad showed up. It was just a normal call out for him, and this woman who was kind of frantic trying to help me out. And I'm saying, like, you know, I need to fill the pool up. this woman's really frantic trying to get on front of this guy. She runs me back and she says, he's on his way. He's just on Bradford Road. I went, yeah, that's not far from me. He says, he has asked me to tell you, though, they can't guarantee he'll be able to fix it. I went, don't worry, I won't hold him at gunpoint, but anything he can do, even if it's filling up kettles, that'll be good.
Imagine when you can't make a cup of tea because your kettle's doing a firmware update.
it's going to happen. Yeah. It's just that we live in a ridiculous world, I've decided now. I'm done with the entire world. There is nothing redeeming about this planet at this exact moment in time, as far as I'm concerned. So there we go. So, yeah, this is twice this season I've been super miserable. But I have just got back from a lovely trip to Iceland. I like Iceland.
Oh, you should be really happy then.
Well, I should be, yeah, because it wasn't actually that much colder than here. In fact, it wasn't colder than here, but they had snow and it was pretty. Oh. See, it makes such a difference, doesn't it? Which reminds me, actually, Sam, how was your conference in Manchester?
It was really good, really good. I think you've been to one or two now, so you kind of it was just the same, really good quality, particularly quality lightning speakers this year, which is quite exciting for the sort of digital project management product owner type community. Some really, really good people coming through there. But yeah, saw some good old friends, made lots of new. It was really good. It's really good.
So that it's Deliver, isn't it? That one's
Deliver
called?
Conf, yeah. It's the old DPM UK, but they've kind of expanded it slightly now to just sort of anyone involved in that, in the action of delivering stuff.
Okay, that's cool. And Holly actually did a panel, I thought was remarkable.
She did, and do you know what? She reminded me of me before I go on stage, and she was excellent. She was great. I think it was recorded, so if it comes out, you'll be able to see just how good she was.
That was awesome. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that because it's a great conference. I always used to love going to it, but it clashed. They invited me, Manchester or Iceland. It was close.
Right, cool.
It was very close, but I didn't.
That's the last ever invite, so thanks.
Is it? Is that the way it works? Oh, well, fair enough. So it's interesting, isn't it? How some conferences just seem to work and others don't. I've always kind of, what makes a good conference? Do you know what I mean?
I think, I've not really been around on loads of conferences. I mean, I don't think I've ever been to a conference and not spoken at one. So I'm not even sure what it's like to be one as an attendee, which I really would like to do one day. But I think from what I've seen, it's really the same as anything. It's that kind of, attention to detail. It's the thought of seeing it as a production rather than just a meetup, I think is the best way I could put it.
Yeah. Well, Andy, you do shit tons of these. Which conferences do you think work, in your opinion?
Well, I don't do as many as I used to. What did I do? I think I do about 5 or 6 a year now.
Well, that's more than I do.
But the best ones for me are the ones that kind of, and I don't like this word community, but I like conferences that foster this sort of sense of, I don't know what it is, it's kind of like a kind of common purpose or common direction. For example, we were at a brilliant first-time event in Perth last year called the Mixing Conference. And this was a group of very young people who had, they set out with a mission, which was, we want to, kind of put Perth on the map when it comes, in terms of digital design. We want to bring people in, we want to make a big deal of Perth in itself and, the industry that's going on there. And that's what they did. And I have never been to a conference, it doesn't matter whether it's like, the big names, the Event Aparts or the Smashings or whatever, I have never been to an event that was so beautifully designed. They had considered every single aspect of the speaker's experience, the attendees' experience. Cool. There wasn't a single minute that went by that somebody hadn't thought of in advance. And they had really, editorialized the flow of the day. The speaker talks kind of connected with each other. There were echoes, there were conflicts, there were people that agreed and disagreed, which I think is fine. And it was just a really kind of enlightening experience. And, I went away from it thinking, gosh, this is a really good way of actually putting on an event. They may not even do another one. It doesn't have to turn into like an annual thing. It was just kind of that moment in time in Perth, I think, that is people are going to remember, not just a bunch of us that went over there to speak, but, people in the area are going to remember, I think, as a bit of a turning point for people realising that, Perth is actually a place where really good stuff happens.
Hang on, this is Perth, Australia, not Perth near Dundee.
Yes, in Australia.
Right.
Okay. I don't imagine Andy would have been as animated if it was Dundee.
Which is what I think my most important thing about a conference is, where it is. Yes. Australia sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it instantly sounds better if it's in Australia, doesn't it?
I have had to, very, very sadly, I've had to withdraw from a conference. I very, very rarely do this, but sadly I've had to withdraw from one in Cape Town.
Oh, no, I'll do it. Tell him I'll do it.
Well, no, actually, I've lined up somebody else. Sorry, Paul.
Oh, well, thanks a lot.
See, well, you know nothing about that conference, do you, apart from it's in Cape Town and you're excited. See? It's all that matters.
Exactly. And do you know what? I don't even need to know what Andy's talking on. I'm sure I could bullshit it.
It'll be
something about comic books.
No, I'm very sad about it. But obviously, I want to get to Australia and put 100% of my attention towards doing a job. And, I don't want to then be saying, oh, by the way, I'm going to be going to South Africa in a few weeks. So, very, very sad for me not being able to go and for people that may have booked tickets.
If you ever want me to go to a conference, just make sure it's a nice place. Mm. And I'd beyond that, I don't really care.
Well, where would be, here we go, let's put some feelers out then, because you've got listeners all around the north of Scotland, haven't you? So where in the world would Paul Boag like to speak at a conference? Come on.
What you need is a little map with sort of spaces on it where you haven't been yet, and you know, available in Australia. Countries.
Yeah, Australia definitely appeals. Definitely, really want to go there. New Zealand, up for that too. I'd like to go to South Africa. That's another good one. Where else? I quite like the idea of doing some more of Asia. I really enjoyed Asia. So basically, anywhere but Europe and America. Canada, again, I'd like to go back to Canada. I've been there before, but it's really lovely there, and they're lovely people. And actually, I don't really mind America either. And Europe's all right. So anywhere, really.
Except the UK.
You just want to get out. Get out of the house.
Well, no, you say except the UK, Sam, but actually, I quite like doing the UK, because then I don't have to be away from the family for long.
I'm thinking about the jet lag. You're saying about New Zealand and stuff. I wouldn't like getting there a couple of days before, you know?
Oh, no. If it's New Zealand or Australia, I'm there for 6 weeks.
Yes, that's the point.
You know, there's no... You know, and obviously the conference organiser would cover first-class flights, flights both ways. Yeah. I mean, you're used to that, Sam, flying first class.
Yeah,
now.
It's only first class for me now. That's
New way it's going to go. God, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, really nice. Too nice, you know? Too nice. I'm not posh enough to appreciate it, is the truth.
Yeah, and also there's that slight feeling of I shouldn't be here.
Well, the thing was, we were in the cabin on a first class flight recently to New York, and me and my friend must have made it about maybe 5 minutes in before we just broke down giggling and told the attendant we don't know what we're doing, and just help us out here. Excellent. And you know what, we got great, actually probably better service, or the service that we would prefer, I guess you could say, because she whispered to us, I can never afford this either, you enjoy yourself.
Yeah, so I wonder how many people are there and all in the same boat, kind of, sort of all pretending.
Exactly. Well, we were looking around this cabin and I just had this overwhelming urge. I'm basically 40 years old, yet I wanted to walk around in my first class pyjamas, of course, talking to these, asking people, like, well, how are you here? How did you do this? Because this is like, never thought I'd do this and I'm never going to do it again. It's too expensive. Yet we were sitting in front of someone, and when the attendant asked him, you know, if he knew what he was doing, he said, oh, yeah, I do this every week. Every week, I know. I mean, obviously work-related, I assume, but even still, it's crazy, crazy.
What do you mean, know what you're doing? Surely you just sit down. I mean, is it...
No. You see, this is why you're in economy or premium at best, right?
Because you can't
Exactly. Honestly, you sit down and there's, like, first of all, a million bucks to work out.
And not only that, first thing, they hand you a set of pyjamas.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Where do you go? I mean, what you know, you stand there thinking, do I strip off right here?
Well, I went to the little toilet. I'm quite little as it is, so God knows how other people survive. But I went to the toilet trying to be, you know, sophisticated. And I'm pretty sure all they heard from outside was me banging every part of my body against the door and the wall as I'm trying to get into these pyjamas. Yeah, very undignified, but I enjoyed it a lot.
So is there a changing room specifically for pyjama changing?
No, you are meant
to do it in the toilet.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought you were meant... I just started stripping off.
Apparently, that was wrong. So it's like a big slumber party then.
Yes, it really is. It's great.
It's the slumber party with champagne. I hasten to add that I didn't pay when I did it. I got upgraded with Avios points.
Amazing.
I know. Anyway, back to conferences. The other thing that I've discovered about conferences is that I like doing workshops more than talks. Andy, what about you? You do a lot of both.
Well, you see, I will now say often to a conference organizer that I want to do a workshop to make it financially justifiable to make a big trip.
Yeah.
So, yeah, generally speaking, I'll aim to get about, 25 to 30 people, hopefully, in a design workshop. And, yeah, I absolutely love it because it tends to be a day-long rant, basically.
Exactly. That's why I love it.
And, you know, we can digress and we can spend half the morning talking about Planet of the Apes. And, you know, it's really good. I absolutely love doing workshops, and people get to learn something as well, which is great.
About Planet of the Apes?
Well, not just about Planet of the Apes. Sometimes about Star Trek. Occasionally Supergirl.
I don't understand your obsession with Supergirl.
How can you not understand my obsession with Supergirl?
Well, is it you know, is it basically a dirty old man thing? Is that what we're talking here?
Please don't say that I'm old.
Be happy to be dirty.
It's Supergirl. Come on.
See, I don't. The outfit doesn't do it. And we're not having this conversation. It goes into territories I'm not comfortable discussing on the show. So let's move on to talk about our sponsors, right?
We're going to do our sponsors. Who's our sponsors this week, Paul?
Well, I don't think they want to be associated with you, that's for sure. So this is awards again. We're still doing awards. A great organisation. So I am actually, one of the things I'm doing this week is going to host and speak at the conference. But by the time this comes out, I will have already done so. I was looking through the list of speakers. Oh, no, so many awkward names, so many names I can't pronounce. So I've arranged with the organisers to just call everybody Bob. Apparently that's okay. I don't think they actually meant it, mind, when they said it. Anyway, so awards do conferences and stuff like that. But one of the things I wanted to focus on today is that they have a professional directory where they list agencies or freelancers, which is great if you you are. I know a lot of people that listen to this show hire agencies and freelancers all the time. And this is quite a good place to go and start looking for people. I mean, obviously, let's be honest, word of mouth recommendation is always the best way to go when it comes to this kind of thing. But this is certainly a better approach than just starting to Google on the subject, because all you find out when you Google is who's best at search engine optimization. And that's hardly the only criteria by which you should be selecting an agency. So this directory is kind of much better way of looking for people. So you can filter by location, obviously. You can filter by price range, which is quite nice as well, when you have a finite budget. But most importantly, you can filter by category. So the type of work you want to do. So interactive, SEO, social, UX, graphic design, whatever else. And what's really nice is you can click through to a more detailed profile where all of the work, the design work that they've been doing, is actually listed and shown on the website. And what's really nice is other designers, and developers and people like that have been able to vote on their work that's in the portfolio, which means that you get kind of, I mean, obviously you need to take it with a pinch of salt, but you get like a professional take on some of the work that they've been doing. Obviously I don't suppose people stop to do a thorough and detailed review of this work, but it's another reference point if you don't have a frame of reference yourself. They've got about 2,700 people listed, so this is quite a big group, but not a massive group, which brings me on to the other flip side of this coin, which is that if you are an agency or a freelancer, this is definitely something worth checking out, because 2,700 isn't that massive a list, yet awards gets a huge amount of traffic to it. So it's great exposure if you're an agency or a freelancer. Great way of attracting new clients, but also of recruiting, you know, top talent and making kind of business connections and all that kind of stuff. The cost for being listed starts at about €150 per year, which isn't really that much at all. And you can find out more about that and everything else that is awards by going to boag.world/awards, AWWWARDS. Cool. So that's that. Let's then move on to our discussion. As only you, Sam, you are the only good person out of everybody. Let me know what you were going to talk about before the show started. You get to go first.
Excellent. Okay, so you mentioned I was at DeliverConf, a conference in Manchester last week, and I was on a panel, and one question I got, I've kind of had it quite a few times, especially in the last few years, and I just thought it was worth giving my thoughts on it here. So the question I was given was, how do you go about convincing a client to move to a more product-based strategy versus a project one? Mm-hmm. And apparently I committed a bit of a faux pas here. I answered the question with a question initially. From a panel.
Is that a faux pas? I quite like that. It's,
I don't know.
It's the politician's approach.
Well, I've never done it before, but this one I'm quite sort of passionate about, because my question back was, well, should you be convincing a client to move from this way of working to that way of working? And the reason I kind of always come back with that initially, is because it seems that a lot of people are determined to make people work a certain way because it's best for them and because they genuinely believe it's a better way to work. But I think they sometimes skip over the fact, is it right for everyone involved? It always reminds me of the Jurassic Park quote from Jeff Goldblum, whatever it was. Your scientists were preoccupied with whether they could. They didn't stop to think if they should. Mm-hmm. It was really just to say that even if you think that the right move for your client or whoever you're working with is to, say, go to a more product-based way of working, I think you should really not take that assumption to begin with. You should go in there and work collaboratively with the client and really sort of analyze the problem with them. And it could turn out that, you know, you may find out that working in a product way is better and more beneficial for you, but you may not. You may not. It could be, often I've done this and I've gone in there sort of almost with a, I guess you could say, a strategy to get an end result that I want. But if you take that journey approach, you often find that it's not quite right. And your idea of a solution was kind of okay, but there are definitely some things to consider. And therefore you end up with a kind of either a hybrid. In some cases, it might not be right to change. But I think if you go through the process to find that out, then you're both going to, there's no loser really in that situation. Mm. And another reason to do it that way is simply because when you go into a client, whether it's pre-sales or an existing relationship, and you try and sell, I find a lot of people hard selling. And they'll sell the cliched benefits of working a certain way, which of course exist, but they're often a lot harder to actually achieve. And they're very specific to not only a project or piece of work, but a relationship or size of company. There's so many different variables to take into account. So if you just work through the problem, that's really my piece of advice for this, is that, you know, just find out as a journey. And you know what? Whichever way you come through it, that client is going to be an awful lot more bought in to both, you know, you as a person, who you work for, and the solution that you end up with.
That is very wise words. Wise words there, Sam.
Thank you.
But also applicable not just in that context, but in almost every context.
I think so.
From design to what CMS you're going to use to approaches to creating content, everything. Listen to people and have a discussion rather than go in with a fixed agenda.
Yeah, be willing to have your views, I guess, amended or just be willing to be wrong, I think. You know, it's not easy. I'm no good at it myself, but I understand the benefit. And when I see others achieving that, or myself occasionally doing the same, it feels good after everything. You know, you feel like you've actually negotiated and you've come to some compromises and you've ended up with a good place. It might not be perfect to where you wanted it, but I think overall it's going to be much more beneficial. I mean, the funny thing is, I think that a lot of people ask about moving from a product to a project, from a project to a product way of working, because, you know, the sort of solution benefits aside, there's also the commercial benefits for an agency. They want that kind of long-standing relationship. But I think in a counterintuitive way, by going through that process with a client and not trying to hard sell them what you want, you actually, in a weird way, you're actually building that relationship a lot more. So I mean, this is only things I can say after a lot of pain. This isn't just sort of obvious to everyone. It's just because I'm old, I think. But it's something that I hear a lot these days. And I just think people have just, you know, slight twist on it and they're going to get a lot better results.
Yeah. Well, was the whole of that project product thing actually code for don't be a shit on social media? Because you could apply it in that context as well, where we like to argue rather than listen.
I haven't thought about it, but yeah, you could, I suppose.
Or,
maybe
or politics.
Possibly.
Or, it applies in all of life.
Maybe. See,
you're so profound and you don't even realise it.
Thanks.
Okay, let's have the newbie on the show. Well, not newbie, he's been on here more times than anyone else combined, but the not regular on this this season, which is Lee.
Oh, hello.
You are the Marcus standing, aren't you?
For this week? I am, yeah. I
caught you by surprise there, Lee, didn't it?
I'm always surprised.
Well, I realise. But the trouble is, I started speaking and realised that what I was saying wasn't actually true in any way. But by that stage, you know, I'd committed. So, you know, I couldn't actually say no.
About
I'm talking
being
bollocks.
A newbie, because I've been on this thing for decades.
Yes.
But only randomly.
Yeah. Next time we do a season with people on every week, you can be on every week.
Well,
aren't you excited by that?
If I would be allowed to, you know, having work to do and stuff, you know, who knows?
I meant, it depends whether you've got a good choice this week. Consider this your interview, right? Wow. If you do well with this choice, we might have you on regularly.
I have two options, a very quick one or a longer, intense one.
But you pick whichever one you want.
As we're at half an hour, I should probably go for the short one. And I'm using this little thing right now, and it's probably my most used app on my Mac. Because I'm fairly new to the Mac, only a sort of few years now. And I do conference calls so often. They seem to be like all day, every day at the moment. And this all started, I mean, conference calls came about as I had a young family. And so the fear of sounding unprofessional with children and dogs in the background has always been a kind of real fear for me. And it's really off-putting as well when you're trying to talk and you're conscious that people can hear you and hear what's going on in the background. And it's always kind of thrown what I'm thinking about. And it's just...
Hang on a minute. Are you saying, is your recommendation for this week some kind of tranquilizer gun to use on your kids and dog?
Yeah, it's a hut down the bottom of the garden with a big padlock on. That's what it is. For them, obviously. No, this is just a little app which I rely on 100% because it mutes my mic. And I always use it. I set it up to basically press to talk. So as soon as I release this button, which I'm holding down now, it will mute me. So I've become quite adept at using this because it's been the same button for years. And I've had various other mutes on headphones, headsets and microphones, but I've never really trusted them. And they've kind of let me down. But this one, it's a little app called Shush.
Right.
And it just sits top right and you can assign it a hotkey and you can set it up to... either press to talk or press to mute, so you can toggle between the two. And sometimes I do get that a bit mixed up. as long as I leave it in the right state, it gives you an indication on the toolbar of what state it's in. So it's a little cross when the microphone's off. So it's just a very simple little recommendation. But this app, Shush, which I think is a couple of quid in the App Store, it's just has never let me down. It's just must be tied really low level into the mic input.
I like that. That's a really good idea. Because the number of times I've, wanted to, even like the old fashioned cough button, where you just want to kind of hack up your lungs and you don't want to do it down the mic, all that kind of
thing. Yeah, it's absolutely. So I only press it when I've got something to say.
Lee, that sounds like a missed opportunity there. You could easily hook a little mic up through your sleeve, suddenly your Secret Service.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Hey, I'll tell you, I've got a side recommendation off of the back of that, because the instant thing that went through my mind is, oh, great, another app sitting in my menu bar, right? Because I've got more apps in my menu bar now than I have in my dock. It's just ridiculous. You've got hundreds of these frigging icons. Does everybody know about Bartender?
I do, Paul.
You don't. But Bartender is a great little app that you can get that essentially allows you to organize all the stuff that sits in your menu bar. So you can hide stuff completely, or you can say only show it when it's active, or show it in a separate bartender extra bar. So in other words, there's a bartender icon in the menu bar and then everything else is hidden in the bartender bar. So you click on the little bartender bar icon, of course this is turning into a tongue twister, and it expands down a kind of second menu bar with all your icons hidden away. So you can tidy everything away. It's great.
Yeah, I seem to have lost Bartender. I did have it going. I think I've tidied it away somehow.
You've tidied it. That's very meta.
Well, I've got the Bartender menu icon hidden as well.
So do I.
Okay, so you barely need to worry about it, but just occasionally I think I need an app, and damn it, I've got to find it somehow.
I've got a keyboard shortcut that brings up the Bartender bar. So, yeah, it's a good little tool.
Did Lee pass his interview? Is all we need to know, really.
Well, it was a bit shit. It wasn't even to do with web design, was it?
Something about sound and family, I don't know.
It's to do with everything we do. Every job has to have a conference call. I was covering all bases.
Give me what the other subject was.
Well, the other one is a little CMS that I use to build what I like to call cardboard websites. It's a flat file CMS.
Called
Grav. And I've been through quite a few flat file CMSs from Jenkins and Statamic. And this one called Grav just does everything I possibly want. So there's no database to worry about because I don't want to get tied up in knots with MySQL, which I have done in the past with WordPress. But it means I can build a complete wireframe prototype. And it's open source as well, so I don't have to pay. Because I quite often have two or three little projects set up, so I might have a whole new instance. But when I move on to the design step, I'll basically have the wireframe built again in another copy of the CMS. But what I really like is the fact it's flat text files using Markdown. It uses Twig for all the templating. I've got it hooked into our grid system. And I just like to be able to show clients the thinking behind the design and the navigation so they can, as soon as possible, navigate around the site because they want to know how it works. And I've used so many wireframing tools like Axure and Balsamic, which still have their place for kind of doing things quickly in meetings. But by using this CMS, it just means I can build the whole thing much more quickly. And when navigation gets changed and titles get changed, it all ripples through rather than going through something like Axure manually and changing everything. Because inevitably everything gets renamed and restructured as we move along. And that ends up sapping a lot of time, whereas a CMS will just take care of all that. But so it's getting that kind of power without the without messing with the database, which for me is just such a time saver. So
such a shame you didn't choose that as your subject. That would have been loads better. I mean, that's relevant to us. And we could have had a whole conversation about, how I tried Grav and Grav was quite good, but I came across Pulse and Pulse suited me better. We could have got into it. And then we could have had a great conversation. great conversation about the fact that when I was in Iceland, somebody gave a great talk about prototyping where they went through lots of different tools. And we could have discussed those tools, but no.
Oh, well.
You're having this conversation with yourself, Paul. It's okay.
You don't need rest of us, do you?
I've never needed you. Never. Sorry to break it to you. It's just the way it is, Anyway, on that basis, let's do my pick next, because then I can carry on without you even more, which is wonderful. Have any of you come across a tool called Full Story?
No.
Oh, this is a great tool. So they were a sponsor on the show a couple of seasons back, right? And it was one of those products that I could absolutely 100% get behind because it was awesome. But it had this horrendous price point, at least for, the majority of people. If you work in a large enterprise thing, it was fine. If you worked in a large agency, it was fine. It was priced around those kinds of things. But for anybody else, it was kind of a little bit over the top. And essentially what it is it's an analytics package, but with a bit of a difference. So what it's doing is it's recording the DOM as it goes along. I'm just trying to remember what the URL is. Let me just have a look. I'm pretty sure it's just fullstory.com, but I might be wrong. Let's have a look.
What a fascinating podcast this is.
That's all right. I just took a minute. It's okay to pause for a moment. It doesn't have to be live airtime the whole time, Andy. Is this what your workshops are like? Do you take breath? Do you? Yes. It's fullstory.com. So essentially, it's recording the DOM as it happens, and it's recording cursor movements. So what you do is you get a video recording of individual sessions but not just a video recording of individual sessions, the entire DOM of it. So can you imagine, you know, somebody gets an error message, for example, or something goes wrong. You can watch back that, including the error message, right? You know, you can see where people are clicking and how they're clicking and all of this kind of stuff. So there are other products out there that do similar things, that record user sessions. But it's the fact that they actually record the whole of the DOM that makes it really, really interesting. Also, another thing, let's say you had a feeling that something was going wrong with, say, clicking people clicking on the newsletter sign up form. All right. Why weren't more people subscribing to the newsletter? Okay. Now, if that was Google Analytics, you would have to add an event tracker to the button, wouldn't you, that you wanted to then track. And of course, that means that if you only realize, you know, you've been running Google Analytics for 6 months, and then today you decide that you want to start tracking that. So you've now only got data from now onwards. You haven't got data for the last 6 months because you've only got data from the point where you add that event tracker. But because Full Story is recording the whole DOM, it means it's recorded every click on that button for the last 6 months as well. So it means you've got historical data on anything. So you can do this mixture of stuff of looking at normal analytics, but then drilling down and actually watching the videos of the individual things. So it's an incredibly powerful tool. And I'm not surprised, therefore, that they were charging a big whack for it. And they still are if you want a lot of traffic. But they've just started offering a free version for like recording 1,000 user sessions per month or something like that. So it's really worth checking out now because it's something I refer to all the time, just to check how people are navigating around my site, what they're doing, answer questions or thoughts I'm having on the site. So definitely check out that fullstory.com.
Cool.
Right. That obviously really resonated with people then.
No, it just sounds great.
I'm just looking at how much it is for 6 months data retention. But yeah. If you've got a site that's really going to benefit from this kind of data, then, you know, you should be making enough money for the site to justify the cost of using a tool like this. You know, you're not going to invest into this unless there's a good monetary reason for doing so.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why, but if you just want to try it, I tell you the thing that the use case that I'm really glad they're offering the free version for, and I think is a good move on their part, is because there's people like us, all of us, well, maybe not Sam, because Sam works in-house, but the rest of us, you know, we're either freelancers or work for agencies. So we want to try out this product so we can then recommend it to our clients. And now you can do that. You can, you know, try it out. You can play with it. You can, you know, try it on your own website for a bit and see what it's like. And then you can, you know, actually pay for it later if that makes, you know, with an individual client.
Quite like one of their features. It's got rage clicks. It says automatically find customers who click rapidly in frustration. It's quite interesting.
I use that one quite a lot.
I'm sure.
Quite a revealing one. Yes, so that is Full Story. We've done Lee, so we've got Ryan and Andy next. Let's do who do I love more? Ryan.
Hello.
Ryan, what have you got for us?
So today I'm going to talk about a service called Image IX. Mm-hmm. Have you come across this?
No.
So this is a really cool service. So it does post processing on images on the fly.
I know these kinds of things. Yeah, they're amazing, right? Aren't they?
So it acts as a CDN, so you can link it up. So say you're saving your images just to your web hosting, or your images get saved to Amazon S3 or whatever. You tell it where the images for your website are, and it turns it kind of takes a copy of them, and then you can add parameters onto the end of the URL to manipulate the image. So you can just store a load of high quality images, and then you can say, you can just put a parameter on this, you know, W equals 800, and it'll return you an image that's 800 pixels wide. But it does so much more. So, you know, you can adjust the exposure, you can do image masking, you can do face detection, you can, You can tell it that you want the width to be, say, 800 pixels, but you want the DPR to be 2, so it brings it back. It actually returns an image at 1600 pixels so that you've got your kind of high-density resolution images. You can do all sorts with it. And you can also get it to compress. So if you put Q equals 30, it'll bring 30% compression on a JPEG image, things like that. So you can actually, it just does all this on the fly. Every time you request the image, it just brings back a different, you know, it just processes it and then sends it back, and it's really quick as well. So we've been using this a lot for stuff because we've been working with some clients that have got very, very image intensive sites, and it just lets you manipulate images for different scenarios, and you can work from the same image rather than having to, you know, crop your images and getting them to the right ratios that you need for a particular element on your site or something like that. You can just do it all through ImageIX and just request it at certain dimensions and certain qualities and different effects and, you know, and things like that. So it's really, really cool service. So I wanted to mention that.
How does that work with a CMS then? If you've got a client adding an image to their CMS, does the server do an upload to ImageIX in the background?
Well, this is what. Say for example, on any CMS, you like with WordPress or Craft or something like that, you kind of the default setting is it just gets saved to a folder on your hosting. What you do with ImageIX is you tell it where the publicly accessible folder is, okay, and it indexes that folder. And all the images that are in that folder, they're master images. And then you can request, one of those images to be pre-processed by just adding the parameters onto the end. So it's just you replace whatever the URL for your host, wherever the image was. So say, you know, on my website, nodeadvicestudio.com/, and then images/, and then header.jpg. You'd replace the domain with whatever URL ImageIX gives you, and the rest of the URL will be exactly the same, and then you just add your parameters onto the end, and it just post processes all those different things based on your parameters. So the nice thing is it's automatically syncing all the time, so as you're adding new images through your CMS, they're instantly available, because when you request them through ImageIX, it's indexing and keeping it in sync. But the nice thing is it acts as a CDN then as well. So your images are actually being served up quicker because it's acting as your CDN.
Cool.
That looks very cool.
Mm. Particularly like the face detection.
Yeah. Face detection is really cool. Because it even does it if there's multiple faces as well. So if it detects multiple faces, and then you can say, I want you to bring me face 3 or something like that, you know. It does auto cropping. You can do masking. You can overlay images. You can blend images. It's really powerful when you actually start getting into it.
Does it do anything like? I mean, you can obviously do this yourself, but does it do anything like progressively loading images as you scroll down the page? Make sense? Lazy loading. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
Well, lazy loading would be controlled through the front end. You wouldn't request the image until you got to that point in the screen. So no, it doesn't do that, but you could set your site to load the images in on your through your site, and then it's requesting them from ImageIX. So yes, that would still work, but it doesn't control that now.
And then the one other thing, because there's another service called SIRV, which does a similar thing. The one other thing that they seem to do, which I quite like the look of, I mean, they've got things like zooming. You can zoom in on images. And they also support kind of 360 viewer for imagery and a responsive image thing, so it actually provides the correct size per available space. Now I have to say it's considerably more expensive, but I was just trying to compare and contrast.
Yeah, sure. I've not actually seen the serve one, but yeah, very similar. They're obviously working in the same space. The responsive imagery stuff, I know ImageIX does, but I don't know if it rotates. I don't think it rotates images.
What about zooming?
Can't see from the API. Might do.
No. I mean, the pricing is quite different between the two, because your one is, what's that? It's $3 per thousand master images plus 8 cents per gigabyte of bandwidth, while Serve or whatever it is for an equivalent package is $19 per month for 5 gigabytes of storage.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, it is more expensive. But
ImageIX does do zoom. It's focal point zoom.
Oh, there you go then.
FP-Z equals and then whatever your number is, and then it'll zoom in.
I like that.
So yes, it does do zoom.
I really ought to set something like this up on Boag World, because
oh, it does rotation as well.
Ah, there you go.
So it does do everything. The really nice thing is if, so say for example on Boag World, all your image URLs are set the way they're currently set. To just be using ImageIX, all you've got to do is change the domain to point to ImageIX, and all your images will just work exactly as they are. And then you just figure out some way of adding the parameters onto the end to optimize them. But you don't need to change anything in your templates or anything. You just need to figure out a way to just change the URL.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very nice. Yes, we should all be doing stuff like this because, I mean, image performance, that's the big thing. I've spent all this time on Boag World. Well, I didn't. Ed did. And Dan spent all this time kind of optimizing it to be good performance. And I do compress the crap out of my images and try and make them good. But the truth is they're the biggest, you know, bottleneck on my site because I have a lot of images. So, yeah, that'd be good. Right. That leaves Andy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what book have you got for us this week?
I've actually got two books, but before I mention which books they are, I just want to ask a question. Who out of our esteemed group has heard of Sir John Hegarty? Hands up.
No. I've heard that surname. Whether it's the same person, I don't know.
I don't know. There's no way for me to tell, is there?
No.
Because I don't know who you're thinking of.
Hegarty.
Also, I do feel, I hate it when speakers do this. Have you heard of so-and-so?
Well, and I don't mean... Just,
the only reason people ask that question is you're hoping that we haven't, because you're, then you've got that smug sense of you being a know-it-all.
Well, I don't need...
I'm calling bullshit on you.
I don't need to ask the question to feel like that. Not at all. I know that I know more than you. Anyway, so, not just John Hegarty, but Sir John Hegarty.
Okay.
He's an advertising executive, and he was the founder of the advertising agency Bartle Bogle. Oh, I can't even say it. Bartle Bogle Hegarty. Exactly. Yeah. And he was a founding shareholder at Saatchi & Saatchi and various other advertising agencies. And you might know Sir John Hegarty from ad campaigns, like, for example, when the world zags, then zig, I think that's the way it was, for Levi Black Jeans. Back in the 90s, and for the Levi 501s campaign, you know, the ad with the guy takes his kit off in the laundrette?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Basically, that was John Hegarty's work. And he came back to me. I mean, I've known about Hegarty for years, and then I was actually doing some Googling after buying one of the books I'm going to tell you about last year. And he actually wrote this really interesting quick article in The Guardian last year, which was about whether or not technology is adding to or taking away from creativity. And there's a particular quote which I shall read you from this article, which I think just kind of aligns very much with my view on where we are right now with design on the web, etc. And he said in this article, "There's only one certainty I'm prepared to stake my reputation on. Tomorrow will be more creative than today. Not that everyone in the world of communication will agree with that. There are those who believe rich data, or big data as some call it, will be the answer to all their problems. The idea that reducing us all to a set of algorithms will provide the answers commerce needs, and of course is laughable. But there will always be fools that somehow believe this nonsense. It's important to understand that technology creates opportunity, but it's creativity that creates the value." Which I thought was incredibly kind of intuitive. Anyway, great thing to say. So my two books for today are both by Sir John Hegarty, and one is a little book. It's actually called Hegarty on Creativity, There Are No Rules, published by Thames and Hudson, and the link is in the show notes. And it's a little book with 50 provocations, little tips on creativity and on nurturing it and sustaining it and harnessing creativity. And lots and lots and lots of little tips, including this one, which I find interesting. I'm going to see how this goes when I go to Australia and work in a large kind of open plan office, which is take your headphones off. Remove your headphones is the title of this section. Mm-hmm. And he says, do you know what really upsets me, apart from peanut butter? When I see one of my creatives wandering through their day with headphones on, why are they cutting themselves off for the world? Inspiration's all around us. All that we see, hear, touch, taste, and smell helps us form new ideas, even if we don't realize it. So why reduce the amount of inspiration reaching you? Why wear headphones? Good point.
There's inspiration, and then there's really annoying chat about stuff that's got nothing to do with anything that's not, but you just need to shut out. So I can understand.
As a developer, headphones are a code for shut the fuck up, I'm working.
But yeah, you might miss something. You might miss a nugget of creativity or something, but then again, you might just have your brain turned to mash so you can't think of anything. It can't work. So, yeah.
So that went down well, Andy.
Well, there's this one particular bit which I think is interesting. But I do recommend the book. It's a very kind of, it's the sort of thing you read on the tube, you know, little kind of pep talks about creativity. The other one is the one that I think is way, 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 way worth buying, and that's Hegarty on Advertising. Now, you know, there are going to be some really boring people out there that think, oh, bloody hell, advertising, why would I read about some kind of, you know, evil beast industry like Jeremy Keith? But this is a incredibly good book, Hegarty on Advertising, Turning Intelligence into Magic, which I think is fabulous. And it's basically Hegarty's kind of, not his autobiography, but his sort of, you know, story about his journey through the advertising industry. And it talks about, you know, the role of agencies, and he talks about brand and audiences, and goes into, you know, how we can actually make our pitches more successful, and, you know, about storytelling and this kind of thing. And it's a really, really good read. And I want to just pick out one section that I think, again, is kind of interesting from the chapter on ideas. And I think this is really quite, again, quite relevant to the kind of stuff that we talk about on the web. And here he says, why does Hollywood produce so many predictable, boring movies? Because they're following a formula. And there's nothing a formula-led mindset likes more than a nice, comfortable process. This ring any bells to you, Atomic Web Design? You can take refuge in a process. Those in business who are formula-led are always trying to find a way of processing creative thought. They want to streamline it. They want to make it more predictable. So...
yeah, now that one I do agree with.
So I think that this is a couple of really interesting books. I think that it's not only important to get inspiration, you know, visually from looking at art directors like Neville Brody and Alexei Brodovich and people like that that I've been talking about this season, but just actually challenging this approach that we seem to have solidifying around us, which says that everything has to be about big data, or, you know, we have to learn from our users and all this kind of nonsense, or about, you know, people trying to establish a process on creativity. And these two books are brilliant for challenging that. So I heartily recommend Hegarty on Advertising and Hegarty on Creativity. Links into show notes.
I really like the pricing on Amazon, because it's kind of in the same sort of thought process, because the Kindle is like $12.50 and then the hardback book is $13.50. So it's really, he really wants you to buy the hardback book, doesn't he? Which is a much more tactile, visceral kind of experience.
And it's a lovely little book.
Yeah, they're nice, yeah, nice
covers. If I get hardback books, I never read them. That's the trouble. It was a really interesting. I was somebody offered me a copy of their book while I was at this conference, and they get and they offered me a hardback version of it, and I said, do you mind if you send me the Kindle version? Because I won't read the hardback, because I never do. Sad, but that's just me. Anyway, let's do our final sponsor for the day, which is Proposify, which is all about getting sign-off of your proposals. It's got lots of great features to make it easier and faster to impress your clients and get them, hopefully, to say yes to your proposal. So, for example, You can add your own logo. You can set up your own branded domain. You can create custom email designs so that you're creating this kind of consistent branded experience. Because that's the trouble with a lot of these kind of web apps, is it ends up looking like the web app rather than your brand. And we want things to be consistent with our own identity. It's got, you can add these nice interactive fee tables, to make it easier for your clients to choose which parts of your products and services, that they want, which is really nice. So you can make some items optional and that kind of thing, which is a really useful tool. Because oftentimes people look at the price and then they gulp and that can put them off. But if they can go and manipulate the price to some degree, that often helps. They've got a great online signature tool that lets clients sign your proposal straight away right there in the browser. You can add as many signature lines as you like for the client and for your team if you want. It also makes it legally binding. Which can lead to means that the whole process of getting sign off, getting up and running with the work can be about 60% faster because you're not having to create statements of work and terms and conditions. It could all be bundled together into one big document. You can email your client, obviously, a customized link to the proposal, which is mobile friendly and can be viewed on any device. So there's no need for emails with big attachments or print and ship proposals or get fax back signatures or any of that kind of stuff. It's all done very easily from anywhere and at any time. You can make PDFs of them as well. So if a client prefers a high quality PDF version, you can create those really simply. The feature I probably like most of all about Proposify, is the fact that, you know what the client is doing. So they'll notify you as soon as the client opens your email, as soon as they click on the proposal link, if they comment on anything, and most importantly, obviously, if they accept the proposal. So you're not kind of going, why haven't they come back to me yet? Because you'll know, well, they haven't even opened the email yet. So, which is really good. They also will schedule friendly reminder emails to your client if they haven't viewed the proposal after a certain amount of time, if you want them to. And the clients can make, as I've said, comments on any section of the proposal, so you can answer their questions or address any concerns they might, or even make revisions, which is really good. And this, all of this kind of stuff, if you're outside of America or the UK or English isn't your first language, the whole of this is available in 15 different languages, allowing you to do everything from customize the date format to choose your currency, etc. You can find out more about all of this at proposify.biz/BoagWorld. So that about wraps it up for this week's show. I do want to quickly do a plug. I try not to do these too often, but I'm when I was out in Iceland, I was doing a workshop on persuasive design, how to create design that actually converts and gets people to buy. I've decided I'm going to run that same workshop online, right? So running an all-day workshop online sounds like hell on earth, doesn't it? But what I'm going to do is I'm going to split it down into four sessions, right? So at the same time, every week for 4 weeks, we're going to do an hour and a half session where I'm going to talk about some aspect of persuasive design. Then between sessions, there will be an open chat room. I'm using a great tool called crowdcast.io to run the whole thing. And there's an open discussion area between sessions so we can talk through what's going on and what you're learning and what your thought processes have been. And then you do the next week's session and next one and next one and so on. So if that's something that sounds interesting to you, then I'd encourage you to find out more about it at boag.world/workshop. That's going to be happening from the beginning of March. So how do people find out about each of you? Lee, let's start off with you. Where can people find out about you?
Well, hang on. We need to do the Marcus terrible joke first.
I know. We have to have a joke.
I have found a joke.
We're going to do the joke
equally as bad
anyway,
as something Marcus may have found. So
yeah, I've got
one too. See, we're all prepared. Okay.
All right. Well, Lee, you go first.
Here we go. What's the difference between a well-dressed man on a bike and a poorly dressed man on a unicycle?
What is the difference?
Attire.
Oh, I quite
see,
like that.
The right response.
Yeah, you did well. Well done. Andy, have you got something equally bad?
Yes. Why doesn't Donald Trump take Viagra?
Why doesn't Donald Trump take Viagra?
Because that would be a rigged erection.
A rigged erection. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Now, that's good. A bit too good. Yeah.
You think so? Oh, sorry. Yeah. I wanted to aim high in Marcus's stead.
Yeah. No, it was good.
Too high.
Good.
You blew it.
All right, Lee, go on, give us where'd you come from? Who are you? Where'd you come from?
I am a designer at Headscape, and you can find Headscape at headscape.co.uk.
What about you on Twitter? Are you?
I am at Lee, L-E-I-G-H, where I sometimes
which
tweet.
Which is really annoying. Yeah, which is really annoying most of the time because people get their wrong.
It's annoying because I get every single tweet where they've misspelt a hyphenated Lee hyphen Alexander or something like that. I get so many tweets that aren't for me.
Yeah, there you go. So tweet Lee and actually mean it for him. Yeah. It'll make him happy.
That would be nice. I haven't had one of those for a long time.
Okay, Andy, what about you? Where can people find out about you?
Stuffandnonsense.co.uk is my studio, and you can catch me on Twitter at Malarkey.
Cool. Rhyme?
I'm on nodividestudio.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Ryan Havoc.
And Sam.
And the site is thesambarns.com, and Twitter the same, at thesambarns.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, guys, and thank you too for listening to the show. We will be returning again next week for more advice, tips, and reviews of apps and such like. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you for hanging on.
Bye.